Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a top secret network of highly secure locations across North America, this is the Spurs Insider, brought to you as always by Taco Palenque. I'm your host, Mike Finger, joined by our panel of Express News beat writers, Jeff McDonald and Tom Orsborn, and Express News sports editor Nick Talbot. We're going to talk about the week that was in Wimby Land, and I'm not sure where to start because we saw sort of the best. Well, since the last podcast, we saw sort of the worst of both worlds. But that it's a work in progress. We're going to talk about it. Let's start with Jeff McDonald in the great state of Oklahoma. This is going to reach your ears after the second round of Victor Wembanyama versus Chet Holmgren. Jeff has not seen that yet, but Jeff, what have been your impressions of kind of a rough week leading into that Oklahoma City game for your local Cagers?
I think for the local Cagers, it brings to mind a catchphrase that is going to be popularized by our starting point guard there.
And that, oh, well, this is a Family Insider podcast, and maybe you can explain that joke without going expletive, into too many details.
Expletive this expletive is how it will appear in the family newspaper there.
Is that where you want to start, the Jeremy Sochan? We do Wimby every week. Mainly Wimby every week.
Let's start with Jeremy Sochan, just for a curveball. Let's start with Jeremy Sochan.
Let's tell the listeners what happened when he spoke to the media and Tom was there. Maybe Tom can speak to this as well. Jeremy Sochan has been part of the grand 2023-24 experiment, as Greg Popovich put it. He's a power forward who's learning to play point guard in the NBA, which I'm not sure we've ever seen before. And there have been ups and downs to that as well. And Tom, you were there at the practice site, The Rock, Victory Capital Performance Center on Saturday when Jeremy was describing his ups and downs. And again, this is a family podcast, so don't be too explicit, but you can sort of give us the broad strokes there.
Yeah, he kind of bared his soul that day. It was after a workout. He's a little reluctant to come talk to us, but he did. And when he got there, it was well worth the wait. Yeah, he just kind of bared his soul about the difficulties of, suddenly becoming a point guard, trying to learn that position, trying to defend, the other team's best players, some of the best scorers in the NBA, and then getting on the other end of the court, trying to set up the offense and find guys and lead the team and listen to Pop and on and on. And, he said he has moments. And he said he has moments where he just says, bleep this bleep. And who among us hasn't been Jeremy Sochan at some moments in our lives where we, that's what we're thinking.
And bleep this bleep.
But we, wake up in the morning, put the clothes on, go do it.
I gotta say, I'm glad that you put the clothes on, Tom.
Yeah,
that's always a good choice.
Yeah, buckle it up. Many times in my life, I know I'm in the shower and I'm thinking, just show up. That's all you got to do is show up. It'll get better.
This is almost the end of the podcast.
We'll get around. My point is, who among us hasn't been Jeremy? It's not, what I found so refreshing is that he articulated it. That was great. I thought it was a great moment. Something more athletes, more of us should do, for mental health reasons. Just say what you're feeling. And, it doesn't mean you're going to give up or quit, but, you keep going.
I got to say, I've been awake for like 30 minutes here in Oklahoma, and I think I've thought bleep this bleep about seven times already.
Right.
So, and some of that might have to do with Oklahoma, you know. Before we get into like the basketball angle of it, though, I just thought the honesty was refreshing. Like we don't get that as much anymore. But Jeremy's a 20-year-old kid, basically. And like you said, bared his soul. And he wasn't saying like, I'm mad at Pop for making me do this, and I want to quit, and I can never do it, and I'll never be a point guard. He was just saying there are moments of those, moments where he feels like this is too hard, and then there are moments where he feels like I can do this, and for the good of the team, he's sort of he's willing to try to make it work, even though it's not his comfort zone. Now, speaking to that, how do we think it's looked on the floor? Because sometimes, I see exactly what he's saying. Sometimes it's like, he looks pretty good and the numbers look pretty good. And then sometimes he has, six turnovers and just looks so unconfident. And to me, that's the part that, if I'm Pop, is maybe a little concerning, because I thought one of Jeremy's best skills last year was just this almost irrational confidence, just so confident in what he's doing. He was the trash talkingest rookie in the league, probably, for a team that was winning 20-something games. And there are times when he's playing point guard in his second season where he just looks unconfident, uncomfortable. And I don't think anybody is at their best when they're unconfident. But I also think to gain confidence, it takes a long time. To gain confidence with any skill, any job, it takes a long time. And you're going to have to fight through the moments of unconfidence to get to the other side where you are confident. And I don't know how many times I can say the word confident in a 10-minute span, but I think I broke the record.
Yeah. It's a lot. I asked him, what's the toughest aspect of this new role? And he said, it's just tiring. He said, it's tiring mentally, physically, and I think, he's talking about the two components of it. Not only is he learning the new position or the new role, we should say, and trying to execute it, but also just that challenge of defending, a top scorer almost every night, or the other team's best offensive player every night. That just adds on to it. And then they're asking him to rebound and, shoot from the outside and do all the other stuff that we want to see him grow and progress into. So it is challenging.
After he said that, I made a point of watching him in that game of Miami, just taking a couple of possessions and just watching the work he put in. And there was one defensive possession that I made note of that was really pretty good. He's guarding Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler decides to dribble around for about 20 seconds of the shot clock. Like he's dribbling left, dribbling right, probing into the lane, out of the lane. And Jeremy's sticking with him all the way into the paint. And then Butler, with about 4 or 5 seconds on the shot clock, throws it out to the top of the arc to, I believe it was Duncan Robinson, who otherwise had a great game. But I believe it was Duncan Robinson at the top of the arc. And it's Jeremy who jumps off of Butler to block the shot at the top of the arc. And that's the kind of effort and energy he's putting in on the defensive end. And this is why Pop wants him on the floor. He's probably your second best player, defensive player, besides Wimby. So you need to get him minutes on the floor, and it just seems like you have to start him to do that. And in order to start him, you have to start him at point guard, unless you guys want to talk about some other lineup configurations they could go with, but I don't think there's a point to that. Because I don't think Pop is looking at that. I think he's looking at this as his starting lineup, sink or swim, maybe all year. And if it doesn't work all year, you do something different next year. That's kind of my read on it right now, 10 games in.
You mentioned towards the beginning of this discussion about how Pop is doing this for the good of the team, or doing this experiment for the good of the team. And I think that's the overarching top point. But if we're looking at best case here, it also could be for the good of Jeremy Sochan, because if this works, just imagine that guy, that defender, that skill set, also being a point guard. I mean, his career, his earning potential, all that is through the roof. Like, there is something in it for Jeremy as well, if this works out. Now, I'm still not convinced it's going to, but it's not necessarily a sacrifice for the team type of thing, because this could work out really well for him. If he becomes an adequate point guard in this league, like that's a really special skill set to have. So I do think that we should acknowledge that this could be good for him.
Fair point.
But you're right in that, just because of the Spurs mix and who's on the roster right now, their best lineup, as you mentioned, is one with Jeremy Sochan playing adequate point guard, competent point guard, and doing all those defensive things that you mentioned, bringing his shot along, which still needs improvement, but there's potential there. He can score. There are times you know, during these first 10 games where you remember, hey, he's kind of a playmaker who can make it, who can create his own shot too. Some of the stuff that we saw last year, he's still doing sort of power forward shooting guard type of stuff on offense. Every now and then there's flashes of it, and you can see how, well, maybe he'd be better doing that. He certainly looks more comfortable doing that than creating shots for other people. But it's a long-term project. And we've mentioned on this podcast before, giving up on something that you've been planning for all offseason for months. Clearly the Spurs have been planning for this for months. Giving up on it just a few games into it, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense either, because that almost makes you look like you're just throwing stuff at the wall. So I totally get why fans can be clawing their eyes out, pulling their hair out, watching this stuff. It can be ugly at times, but I think there's enough promise there, enough bright spots to where you sort of just stick with it. Because again, this isn't a playoff team. It's not like these losses that are happening in November are going to cost them a chance at the NBA title. I think it's worth it because the upside, if it works out, is so, so, so huge, even if the upside isn't that likely to occur.
Yeah, as we've mentioned before, like, this is the year to experiment with this sort of stuff and see what sort of makes you have. The only concern or worry I would have, I don't care about wins and losses right now. I don't care if it looks terrible at times right now. The only concern I would have is just don't break him.
Yeah.
Don't ruin him. Don't ruin his confidence to the point you can't get it back. I don't know if that's going to happen. Like I mentioned before, he's probably the most confident kid in the entire NBA. But just that, you know, don't get him thinking so much and overthinking so much that you take away what makes him special. And that's when he almost just turns off his brain and plays on instinct and becomes this sort of like wrecking ball type player that's just flying all over the place. You don't want him to lose that by overthinking. And he's going to be overthinking 10 games into trying to move the point guard, but you just hope it doesn't become a permanent feature of this, that he gets to the point where he's not overthinking anymore. To the point where these bleep days are far outnumbering the good days, and he's just beaten. Like I said, I'm not predicting that would happen, but if I'm Pop, that's something I'm definitely keeping in mind and something I'm definitely monitoring, you know, on a frequent basis.
Get up, suit up, show up. It'll get better, Jeremy.
There you go.
Is that Ted Lasso or something?
It's Tom Horsborn. That's been my mantra for years. Get up, suit up, show up.
You always turn in your envelopes, Tom.
That's right. That's
my
right.
My mantra has been bleep this bleep for as long as I can remember. I think that was my mantra in kindergarten, I think.
One player whose mantra has not been...
Mike, I mean, Jeff, I almost did a spit take into our new mics with that comment. That was good. I like it. I can imagine you as a kindergartner saying that.
One player who has not been espousing the bleep this bleep mantra so far, even though there have been some tough nights for him, is Victor Wembanyama. Still...
Ooh,
still positive, still upbeat, even though there's been, I noticed after that Miami game, and I think everybody did, there's just a tinge of this is getting a little tiresome. And not necessarily the basketball, but just having to come in. He does more media than anybody else. He has to go to the podium after every game. And I think our French colleagues had mentioned they asked him, One of the questions in French was, are you getting sort of tired of coming in here and doing this after every game? And that's what the sort of heavy sigh that Victor had was that we all saw. And then the French answer of the answer was something along the lines of, no, you know, it's part of it. Something along those lines. But clearly,
I think the
week
tiresome.
That was a week that was rough. It was blowout.
What becomes tiresome isn't just coming in there to talk to us. It's coming in there to talk to us about another loss.
Right.
Usually where they've had a lead or been down a bunch and came back, that's got to get old if you're 19. Like, could you win one game so I could come in there and be happy for once?
But what do you think about just his on-court game lately, heading into this Oklahoma State game? City game.
It's more of the same, you know? I mean, you see moments that could be smoothed out, moments he's learning through. As we've mentioned, Pop is just kind of watching him go right now. There are parts of it that you will hope, you know, that he'll learn from, parts of it you hope that will be coached out of him over the course of time. But then those moments where you just sit there with your, you know, slack jawed. And there's a lot of games where you look at, well, he's having a bad game, man. He's got like 6 points at half, and it's just not working for him. And then look at there at the end, he's got 28, 20, 12 rebounds, blah. Like it every game seems to work out for him now, even when it's not pretty at times. I guess if you want to nitpick some things that I've been kind of thinking about, doesn't it seem like he has slow starts?
Absolutely.
Like his fourth quarter, I think we looked this up on Press Row the other night. This was before the Miami game. But he's shooting 70% in the fourth quarter, quarters, and 26% in first quarters.
He said it a couple of times that he does not start games well. It's been something he's battled, or not battled, but he's experienced his whole life. And, you know, he's talked about the need to play better the whole game, not just late. But he certainly starts slow and builds up, and then he's very good at the end.
Something that jumped out to me.
If I may be so bold to, you know, I'm just a caveman. I don't know much about the ins and outs of basketball. But if he starts slow, my advice to him would be get some easy ones first. He comes out taking threes and taking jumpers, and they don't fall, and then they fall late, and that's great. But maybe if he wants a better start, find a way to get him something at the basket, one of those easy ones.
Run some plays for him.
Yeah, maybe that's easier said than done. Again, I'm just a caveman. But
Coach McDonald.
But, you know, let him see it go in the basket a couple times. Maybe let him get fouled and get to the line and see it go in the basket a couple times in the first quarter. Maybe that'll change his first quarter fortunes. But like I said, even the way it's going, it always seems to work out for him. Like he gets it together, and by the end of the day, you're like, well, he's had a really great night.
Well, maybe when the coach stops observing and starts calling plays, that'll start to happen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm making a bit of a joke, but Pop said he's not coaching him yet. That was a few games ago. I'm not sure if that's changed lately. He's just in the observing mode, and we'll see. Maybe if we move from observing to calling some stuff, maybe he can follow the advice of Coach McDonald and Coach Orsborn and start running some plays. And that'll change everything, right?
Yeah, he'll finally be good at basketball.
Yeah, there you go. One thing I noticed last week that I'm sure is sort of old hat to somebody like Jeff McDonald, who's in his 17th year as the beat writer for the Express News. It hammered home how long an NBA season is, because sitting in the Frost Bank Center this past Sunday evening,
mm-hmm.
I was thinking back to exactly 1 week earlier at halftime of a Sunday game at Frost Bank Center, when your local Cagers were rolling the Toronto Raptors, and on their way to their third straight victory after two in a row in Phoenix, and it looked like the sky was the limit and that we were even talking playoffs. And it seemed like 6 months ago. Just that one week in an NBA season is an eternity. And you think of all that happened between the halftime on Sunday against the Toronto Raptors and that game the next week against the Miami Heat. It was like, I mean, they blow the lead to the Raptors on that Sunday, losing overtime. They get blowed out in Indiana in a game that was never close. You have the whole Victor Takes Broadway, Takes Manhattan story that we haven't even got to on this podcast, but was full of some interesting stuff. And you lose the game on the green and yellow court during the in-season tournament to Minnesota in a game where they again trailed by a bunch, made sort of a valiant comeback that made Pop proud, but fell short. And then another rough game against Miami. I mean, that's six different storylines in the span of 7 days. I don't know, Tom, does that make any sense to you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mentioned to you, you know, on Sunday that Phoenix, those two wins in Phoenix, the high point seemed like months ago. It's just new storylines every night. The games never stop coming. And it underscores to me how tough this league is. And we're talking about Victor, a 19-year-old kid thrown into this for the first time. You know, it's pretty daunting. It's daunting for a veteran.
it almost exposes the risk of our podcast schedule, because we are recording this masterpiece on a Tuesday before this Wemby Chet showdown on Tuesday night. And but by the time the listeners are listening to it on Wednesday morning, like we could have seen an all-time classic last night. Chet and Wemby could have combined for 100 points. Spurs could have beaten the Thunder by 50. Who knows? But the things can change quickly.
But as daunting as it is for Victor, we do know from that New York trip that his teammates have his back.
That's true, Tom. Thank you for the plug.
Great column by Mike Finger. I'd like to hear more about it.
Well, did you read it on expressnews.com, or did you get it in the Spurs Nation newsletter? Where did you read this masterpiece? Was it in the print edition?
It was on my app, my Express News app. Yes.
Tom told me that he
trying to make some plugs right now.
Tom told me that he saw it on Facebook. Tom told me he saw it on Facebook from one of the many who just cut and pasted it into their own posts and stole it from us.
Yeah, does that happen? Nice.
Yeah. But it's cool. It's an honor. People enjoyed it. It was a story that
I told my grandmother never to do that.
I know.
She doesn't listen. She's old.
I told
senile.
Mark Zuckerberg needs to ban her from the platform for plagiarism.
Oh, she should be banned from the platform for way more than plagiarism.
There you go. Jeff and I were sort of arguing over an angle. This is behind the scenes sports journalism stuff that nobody.
This happens
cares
all the
about.
Time.
Yeah,
and I never win.
I usually win. We're fighting over a quote. We're fighting over, I want to write this. Jeff wants to write this. Who gets to write it?
We have the same idea a lot.
Have the same idea a lot. That's sort of an indictment of me, an indictment of him, an indictment of us both. But yes. So there's these negotiations that go on behind the scenes. And Jeff's not happy after this Knicks game because I kind of wanted to write what he wants to write. And there's this sort of clash of wills as to who's going to get it. And I think I'd agreed at the time to let him have whatever he wanted.
Yeah, it was after I gave you that black eye. You had to back down.
That's true. I had to buy the makeup to cover that up, concealer, all that type of stuff. Anyway, I decided to make one last futile, I expected would be futile trip to down the hallway. You tend to do this a lot in reporting. You make trips to the locker room, knowing you're probably going to get nothing out of it. You check one last back hallway, knowing that there's nothing there, just on the remote chance that you stumble into something. And on that night, we stumbled into, first of all, Devin Vassell walking down the hallway, kind of formulating this plan of, they can get mad at one of us for being last on the bus, but they can't get mad at all of us. They can't get mad at six of us. And Keldon Johnson agrees, and Zach Collins and Charlie Bassey. We call him Charlie Bassey. Me and Jeff and the PA announcer at Crypto.com Arena, I'll call him Charlie Bassey. Zach Collins was there. I think I mentioned Jeremy Sohan was there. They decide that they're late for the bus. The bus is late for the plane. Somebody's going to be in trouble for being last, but you can't yell at six people. And so they stand there. It really was remarkable. Victor is there in the hallway saying goodbye to his mom, saying goodbye to his dad, kind of having this moment where his mom is consoling her son after a rough night at the Garden. The Garden denizens were chanting overrated at him. It was another tough loss for the Spurs. And these six millionaires basically stand there and wait for him because they don't want him to be last. And I walked up to Keldon and I was like, what's going on here? And he says, he's saying goodbye to his mom. We don't want him to be here by himself. We're going to walk out with him together. And after Victor hugged his mom, hugged his dad, said his goodbyes, he walks into this group of six veterans who supposedly, according to certain parts of the internet, certain parts of the sports viewing world, should be resentful of all the attention that Victor is getting and are supposedly embittered by being overshadowed. Nope, these guys waited for him, patted him on the back, and said, we're walking out of here together. And this is sort of a corny story, hokey story, sappy story, whatever. But I think it speaks volumes about the fact that the sort of Spurs, the exactly the culture the Spurs are trying to build is working. And usually when coaches talk about culture and players talk about culture, I kind of roll my eyes, as a lot of us do. And a lot of times it is eye rolling worthy. But I think in this case, it really was striking to me. Maybe I have a soft spot. Maybe I'm gullible. But to see those guys sort of wait for him just to make sure he wasn't the last guy on the bus, I think it was meaningful. And so there you go. There's the story, Tom.
Hey, I had a little assist on that, didn't I?
Yeah, you mentioned the Devin line.
I just want the readers and viewers readers and listeners, and I guess viewers, to know that we can also work together. You know, sometimes Durant and Westbrook can get along. You know,
who's Durant in the situation? I think it's fairly obvious.
I do too. No, but anyway,
we'll just leave it at that.
But anyway, I had left the locker room maybe a minute and a half or two ahead of you that day. And I just sort of, I didn't really know any of this was going on, but I walked through that gaggle of Devin and the other five, and overheard Devin talking loudly about how they can get mad at one of us, but one of us can't be late, but we can, if we're, whatever.
Solidarity. It's called solidarity.
Right.
Solidarity.
But I didn't know what he's talking about. I know that I just went up to the, I just kind of overheard it and went up to the press room to write my my piece. And that's when Mr. Finger came up there and told me what he had observed. And I was like, well, I heard Devin say this. And then we both looked at each other and it just sort of clicked. Well, that's exactly what happened. We put the story together, and it was a little teamwork there.
Wow, that's inspiring.
It's the kind of quality behind the scenes stories reporting you're going to get in the Express News print edition, expressnews.com. and all our other platforms.
I know you're saying that for the plug, but I'm going to say it out loud. Nobody else, I'm just going to say listeners and viewers, and nobody else in the world, no other organization, is on the ground floor of every single Spurs game, home and away. So if you want the real behind-the-scenes stuff, you know where to go.
Go to Facebook after they steal it from us.
Oh, good Lord.
I'm just saying. The ground floor of every Spurs game. That's true. I just want to again acknowledge how much I enjoy Madison Square Garden, where the ground floor of the press room is what, floor six. And you come up with the garbage and they yell at you, and the media meal is a pain. And
I think something's wrong with you. Like that you like this. Like you,
I love
like,
it more
you like
than
the
anything.
Punishments. Like I think you need to talk to your therapist about this, about why you like to be just humiliated in that way.
It's not humiliating. It's authentic. I love the authenticity of New York. I love the authenticity of the Garden. There's no being nice to you for nice's sake. It's just real. And realized the other day, it's been as a columnist in my current role, I think it was my seventh consecutive year going to the Garden, and it's just my favorite place to go because of how angry everybody sort of is. It's great, and Pop is great there. Pop loves the big crowd of media at the Garden, and he was delightful as usual.
How many days after you got back from New York did it take for you to lose the fake accent you were doing the entire time there?
This podcast is the first time I've stopped. I just feel like that would be offensive to people for me to do the Brooklyn accent throughout the entire podcast. Maybe it'd be great, but no. Yeah, Jeff's right. I don't stop with the Brooklyn accent for weeks after coming back from New York. It's great. I love it. And you look for the bright sides. Don't let, this is my parting wisdom to the listeners, don't let other people tell you what to enjoy. If you enjoy being miserable, then be miserable. It can be fun sometimes. If you enjoy, whatever. Going to the Madison Square Garden and having a guy just not get your press credential and making you wait in the corner, wait in the corner until they come in with the credentials. That can be fun. And
don't be afraid to say bleep this bleep.
Don't okay, be afraid.
Get it out. Okay.
For your mental health, you don't have to be positive all the time. Sometimes it can be helpful just to say bleep this bleep and try to do better the next day. And we'll try to do better next week. Until then, take care of each other and keep it real.